Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Tonight, I have a special interview for you with Oxford scholar and Giza Death Star book series author Dr. Joseph Farrell. Dr. Farrell will go deep on the assassination attempt on President Trump, who is currently leading the 2024 election on the heels of the dramatic exit of President Biden from the race. We'll take a hard look at the continuity of government COG players mulling their options for the activation of emergency powers through NORTHCOM and how the season of assassination fits into their plans. Please join us now.
Joseph, it's great to have you back.
Thanks for having me back, Daniel.
We already did about a show's worth of dialogue. Before we even started, my goodness. And where do we start with this? Well,
this is like a merry-go-round that won't stop. You just sort of have to leap onto it.
Yes. All right. And here we go. We've been talking a lot over the years about assassination as a tool of political control. Mm-hmm. And we've focused on some of the really hardcore, unexplained aspects in the Kennedy assassination, of both Kennedys, actually, but in particular, President Kennedy. And just in general over the years, in fact, going back to the Nazi regime and all the assassination tools that were brought to bear, people, I think, in general, and it's understandable, don't really understand assassination. It's often portrayed with this whole lone nut aspect. So when we saw this assassination attempt on July 13th, the way that it's being portrayed by the establishment in these hearings, and we know there's a lot of controversy, of course, going on, but they're trying to portray it as Thomas Crooks now, as this disgruntled 20-year-old who just wanted to get a shot off at President Trump, who is the leading Republican nominee and about set to be president in 2025. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He happened to get past the Secret Service, and he got past all these defense mechanisms and law enforcement, got up on that roof, and just got that shot off and just barely missed. But you know what? They took Crooks out, and you know, it's just it's a testament to the political atmosphere being so violent. This is the narrative they're putting out. Joseph, what's wrong with that?
Everything. I mean, where do we start? Okay, we know now, they're admitting that the counter sniper teams had him in their sight and were watching him for about 20 to 30 minutes, I forget the exact figure, prior to President Trump even coming out onto the stage of the podium.
Right.
Now, that under any sort of normal security procedure, I don't care if it's Secret Service or your local rent-a-cop, that kind of failure to notify the security team that's actually surrounding President Trump would never have happened.
Exactly.
So that, number one, is either incompetence or somebody, we're in a lie hop scenario. We're in a let it happen on purpose scenario, at the minimum, right there. Then you keep piling on incompetence after incompetence. And I'm thinking, no, this is by design. They wanted to take him out. So let's look at the so-called lone nut. I don't know what you have found out, Daniel. I've been trying to watch this. I haven't blogged about it because, like I told you before we started, I want things to kind of percolate out. The crucial part of stories like this is the very earliest reports and then those reports that occur when people have had time to let everything settle. And you have the serious researchers going in and evaluating all, because what we're seeing now are all the actors and obfuscators in the mess. They're out in force right now. But I think it's safe to say that what we've learned about the alleged shooter, and let's remember, there were two others that preceded him.
Mm-hmm.
Maxwell Yermak and this guy named Violets or something that apparently had an Antifa connection. So what happened to them and why were they suddenly dropped? So if we look at Crooks himself, the alleged shooter, who, again, like Lee Harvey Oswald, is conveniently dead.
Yes.
Then the first problem with him was, well, he left no manifestos. Now we're learning that he had all sorts of foreign accounts on his cell phone and had some connection to a federal building via somebody else in Washington, D.C., and that his parents happened to be involved in psychotherapy of one form or another.
Yes.
So I'm immediately thinking Sirhan, MK Ultra, and we've got a Jolyon West, you know, a psychologist in the mix somewhere.
Yes.
That's grooming this kid.
Yeah.
So
it's got the fingerprint right off the bat. Yeah. It's got lookalikes. It has this counseling, psychotherapy piece. It's got the government lying.
Yep.
It's got them eliminating options after they're mentioned. You know, we were talking earlier about this ladder that keeps showing up everywhere. It's at the building.
In different spots, yeah.
Yes, it's discarded by someone else's house, and then it's a mile up the road also. Yep. You know, it's three different. And also, Crooks has three different vehicles.
Yep.
They have this, you know, van with Arizona plates full of explosives in front of somebody's house close by that he has these, you know, these trigger devices that he's going to blow these explosives with. Then he's driving around in a Hyundai, and then finally he shows up on a bike.
And speaking of explosives, where did he learn how to do that?
Yes, right. Yeah. That's a lot of education for 20.
That's a lot of education for 20 years old and a guy that flunked out of his local school rifle club. But
yes. You know, right. Let's get real.
Yeah, let's get real. So the whole, you know, the problem here, Daniel, I think that we're watching, you know, all the details that you just enumerated to me are precisely the actions of the obfuscators.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the reason I'm thinking that they're out in force is because they haven't agreed upon a narrative. Because the whole thing went wrong.
Yes.
You know, we were supposed to watch just like we did with JFK. This has the JFK feel to it. I'm in total agreement. We were all supposed to be watching a real life live broadcast of the Zapruder film, which remember, we didn't get to see for 3 years.
Right.
Okay. We were supposed to be watching Trump's brains being splattered all over our television. That's what we were supposed to have encountered.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, the narrative that they had carefully crafted for this whole thing is completely shattered.
Mm-hmm.
So now what we're watching is they're scrambling to figure out what the narrative has to be.
Right.
What are they going to do? Now, I'm convinced, too, that the timing of all of this is hugely significant when you back away and look at the last few months. We've had assassination attempts on the Slovakian Premier Fico. We've had assassination attempts on the Prime Minister of Hungary, Mr. Orban. We've had the Ukrainians come out and admit that they've failed many times to assassinate Mr. Putin. We've had the crazy election results in France, all of this stuff going on.
Wow. Oh, then they killed the Iranian president in that helicopter.
Well, it was supposed to be an accident. Whatever his name. Yeah.
There's another one.
Yeah, there's another one. So we've had all of this going on. And if we really want to go back, the assassination against Mr. Abe in Japan.
Oh, yes.
So, you know.
So it's an assassination season.
It's an assassination season. And you'll notice that all the targets are either moderate globalists or they're not globalists at all.
Right.
That's right.
They're key. Against that larger structure.
They're generally. Against that. Yeah. Putin, Abe, all of these people are against that larger structure in general. And globalism is just, in my opinion, another term for American hegemony, unipolarism, you know, the whole post-Soviet order that we tried to impose on the world. That's what globalism is to me.
Right.
So you look at this assassination and put it in those contexts. It looks to me like someone tried to take him out. You know, I heard all these kooky ideas that, you know, this was Biden gone nuts. Biden isn't competent, nor is anyone
exactly.
in that administration competent yes. enough to pull this off.
You have to go into the deep state.
You have to go into the deep state. And I'm in total agreement, Daniel, with you that this again is a continuity of government thing run amok once more.
The connections are there.
The connections are there. Yeah, there's no two ways about it. Now, the timing is also crucial here from the standpoint of Biden Joe's resignation or withdrawal from the campaign. Yeah. I think that too was part of this plan initially. Get rid of Trump, Biden resigns, and we can do whatever we want. And that has gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because
maybe Kamala and Nikki Haley or something like that.
It had to have been. They don't want Kamala.
Yes.
That, you know, this is another walking disaster of, you know.
Yes.
You know, I before we started the recording, I made the comment that she reminds me of the Wicked Witch of the West in The Wizard of Oz, you know, cackling all the time and come here, my pretties, you know. I mean, she's another Margaret Hamilton without the groom and without the good looks, you know.
They can't be hedging the house betting on her.
No, they can't. I mean, now, I do think there is a long-term Democratic agenda here.
Yeah.
They're trying to get rid of her, and, you know, they're offering her up. But what they're really doing is they are, by doing so and watching her go down in flames, they're going to attempt to rebrand their party, just like Bill Clinton did after the first Bush administration back in 1988. Bill Clinton comes along, you remember, and he creates that Governors Association to rebrand the Democrats as more centrist than they are, because the party by that point had become so identified with the kooky radicalism of George McGovern, you know, senator from my home state, and they've never been able to get away from that. I guarantee you that party has not changed its spots one bit.
All right. All it's done is by President Nixon.
Yeah, you know, it hasn't changed one bit. So they need to rebrand again, and they can't do it as long as Kamala Harris is on the stage. So this is an operation, in my opinion, to get rid of Harris.
Interesting.
Put her up as a sacrificial lamb and have that whole identity progressive wing of the Democrat Party go down in flames. Because so long as that machinery is in control of the party machinery, that party is headed for extinction, no matter how many illegals they bring across the border.
Right.
That's the gruesome reality for them.
Wow.
So I'm looking at assassination, Biden resignation as having been designed as two parts of the same operation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone horribly wrong.
Wow.
It's gone horribly wrong. This means, in turn, that between now and the presidential selection, something else is going to be pulled.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to try something. My personal fear is they could go all the way to trying some sort of cataclysmic false flag event. You know, forget about assassinations. We're talking on the scale of a 9/11.
Yes.
I worry about that possibility because these people are just that nuts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the other thing I worry about is, regardless now of how the election goes, whoever wins, I suspect the other side is going to say, cry foul and not, you know, accepting of the results.
Yeah.
You know, if you thought the reaction to Trump's first election was bad, you ain't seen nothing. And by the same token, I don't think if the Democrats try and cheat and steal another election, that ain't gonna go either.
It does not have the same, they don't have the same environment as 2020.
No, that's COVID. True. They do not. Yeah.
It makes it difficult for them to steal it in that fashion with all the mail-in votes and all the rest.
And while we're talking about stolen elections, let's talk about Bobby Jr.
Yes.
Because he seems to be the one person everybody's forgetting about right now.
Yes. Oh, yes. No question.
And I just want people to bear with me here. Imagine you're a more or less traditional, old school kind of center of left of center Democrat. Okay. Not that there are that many left, but there are some. Okay. And you're thinking, well, who do I vote for? Don't like Orange Man bad. Can't vote for Margaret Hamilton and the Wicked Witch of the West. Let's call her what she is, the Wicked Witch of the Left Coast. There we go.
It's almost an insult to California.
Could you people out there in that wacky state possibly have voted in anybody more incompetent? I mean, this thing that she has about the past, this phrase that she's constantly trying to, I mean, unburdened by the past. Talk about Cliff Notes Marxism.
You know? Well, it's interesting. If you remember in 2020 when she ran, she didn't get any votes. And she was at the very bottom of the entire pool.
I remember that. Yes, I remember that. So, you know.
So the public had the sense, no way, but the party had the sense, oh, we can use her for identification purposes.
And now, you know, they're stuck with it. And this is why I think this is a setup to finally get that whole wing of the party out of the picture. And the interesting thing, I think, you know, I was listening to the radio today, is there were these little stories about Senator Manchin.
Yes.
Making comments, the former senator from West Virginia.
They raised him as a possible candidate early.
Yes.
On, and then he was like, oh, the no names thing, you know, they did all this advertising. Oh, they're going to do it. They're going to do it. And then no names was like, oh, no, you know, we're not going to do it with Manchin. And Manchin sort of laid low. And then he reemerges in this weird primary idea of the delegates selecting someone else besides Kamala at the convention.
If this goes to an open convention, it's going to be really interesting to watch what, if any, his role is.
Yes.
But let's get back to Bobby.
Bobby.
If you're the old school, slightly left of center Democrat, and you're looking at Bobby Kennedy, and you're looking at the Ayatollah Kamalarki, the mad madam witch from California. There's no end of terms I could apply to this lady. If you're looking at her and you're thinking Kennedy, okay, yeah, he's got a lot of kooky ideas. And okay, he's got some good ideas too. Can't vote for Orange Man Bad. Who do I vote for? Well, I think a lot of those Democrats watching this circus that their party has become in the last few years, especially under Biden Joe, are going to be tempted to vote for Bobby.
Wow. Yeah.
I really do. And if that's the case, this is going to be an electoral nightmare for the Democratic Party, like what just happened for the Tories in Great Britain.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Who were demolished by the Labour.
They were absolutely wrecked.
Wow.
And you know, again, I understand why, because the Tories, in getting rid of Mrs. Thatcher, quit being a party of the right. They became a party of the left. So, you know, you've got Labour or the Tories. Take your non-pick of which kind of left government you want.
Very conspicuous visit by your old acquaintance, Boris Johnson, there.
Ding, ding.
We know that you met him back in school days.
Oh, yes.
You remember him well.
Listen.
But he did show up suspiciously at Mar-a-Lago before all of this took place. You have a weird visit of Obama down to Downing Street in the UK.
Yes.
So these are weird moves in the background, like, you know, this is how we're going to go in, each side measuring it out and wanting the UK behind them.
Oh, yeah. The factions are at work.
Yeah.
And you know, the interesting thing here is no one has been doing that really other than courtesy visits with Biden Joe.
Yes.
And no one's, certainly no one's doing it with Kaklin Kamala.
No. They've been avoiding Biden and Harris.
Yes, they have. Yes.
Amazing.
You know, this has been an avatar presidency. And you know, the question's being raised right now. How can we have a president who's not fit enough to run for his party's nomination and yet is still running the country? And you'll notice in his resignation notice or withdrawal notice that his order of theology, as I like to call it, is completely inverted. He's doing this for the party and for the country.
Right.
It's not, I'm doing this for the country and for my party.
Right.
You know, the order is completely scrambled.
Interesting.
It's completely inverted from what it should be. You know, but that's, you know, that's typical Joe Biden. I've never had any use for the man. He's kind of like the trailer park version of the Clintons, as far as I'm concerned, who are the ranch house version of the Bushes. You know, this is really the same little cluster, you know what, of corruption that seems to circle and hover around that family. But anyway,
This is interesting. When you mentioned the Biden resignation from the race there, but still keeping on as president. Mm-hmm. So he's withdrawing as the candidate, but he's still mm-hmm. going to be there. This is an mm-hmm. odd situation. I think we've only actually had that with LBJ is the last time anyway. Mm-hmm. Now this is interesting to me for a couple of reasons. One is for a little while there, he's out there, you know, he's saying we're going to do it and everything. And then suddenly he gets a cold immediately after he gets COVID. And, you know, this is right after the Trump assassination attempt.
Ah.
Now we get Biden then meandering around the weekend, all these rumors swirling that he's dead. Then they put out the notice, but there's kind of a vacuum of leadership there on that Sunday when everyone on all the major news shows don't have any key people, no FBI directors, no White House spokesman, nothing. So it's like a vacuous period. I get almost like a continuity of government emergency powers wing moving around, mulling their options in that period. And also, isn't that dangerous from a foreign policy standpoint
with the rest of the world?
Your leadership is gone.
Well, you have to be aware that President Biden signed some sort of order, as I'm sure you're aware. It's on the White House government site.
Yes.
Turning over the presidential executive power in the certain specific areas to Secretary Blinken, Blanken, Blunken, as I like to call him.
Yes.
And to Secretary Austin, the defense secretary, and so on. So there were specific delegations of certain specific powers to the committee.
Right.
That's been running this avatar presidency. What, and I haven't had time to go through the sections of law that were specified in that delegation. What's interesting is the question of who has the nuclear football.
Right.
Right now, who has it?
And traditionally and constitutionally, it's under presidential control always.
Yes. And who had it while he was, you know, sunning himself at the beach house with COVID or whatever the excuse was.
Right.
You know, and I'm not buying
that. The doctor's like, oh, he's just fine. He's just fine.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, who had the control? It's no wonder no country in the world wants to deal with us because they don't know who they're dealing with. This is the problem. And it has, you know, this government by hidden committee may have worked for a while trying to fool this country, but you're not going to fool Xi Jinping. You're not going to fool Vladimir Putin or Narendra Modi or anybody else in this world who is not only their head of state, but the actual head of government in their country.
Right.
That's the problem. We have no recognizable head of government. We don't know who's calling the shots here. And we all know it ain't Joe Biden.
Right.
The man can't. Is it Jill? Has she been acting like Edith Wilson? You know, mm-hmm. what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You can't, you know, this has to be sorted out. And if this next Trump administration does anything, this whole situation has to be clarified. And he's got to go in there. I'm going to echo some sentiments of a friend of mine that have talked about this privately with me. He's got to go in there in the first 3 weeks of any new administration. And he should have done this in his first administration. He's got to go into the Department of Justice, sit his butt down for about 3 weeks, and start firing people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
the Department of Justice is honeycombed with state actors. It's incredible.
It is.
And Merrick Garland's being at the very top of the heap.
Merrick Garland, you know, that what we're looking at is a Justice Department, quite frankly, that is riddled with these people because it's a holdover from Ed Meese and the first Reagan administration, when this whole Bush-Cheney continuity of government embedded themselves deeply into mm-hmm. the fabric of the federal bureaucracy and then stole Promise software to make sure that they had the computer power to run the whole thing
right.
and create an avatar presidency, which yes. they tried, I think, under Reagan and were not successful then either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
No question. Especially Reagan, it's interesting, and I think this is pertinent to the discussion about presidential power, which is Reagan came in with a set of ideals.
Yes.
And although he was mixed in with a lot of deep state players, he had yes. ideas like we can stand up to communism. Right. I believe gold is money, you know, right. all these types of things. He was very traditional in right. that sense. So as soon as he used all that charm and charisma and cred to get into the White House, the forces with him attach Bush, of course, and then try right. to get rid of him within 3 months
yep.
in the assassination yep. attempt. We're seeing a lot of parallels yep. with history with this. And I know that these people design things in many ways like this. What are we seeing in the Trump assassination attempt that echoes across history? And what is it that would have been in the mix had we been looking at them being successful? What would be the situation now?
Right now? Well, like I say, they would have gone ahead with the dump Biden thing. Mm-hmm. But I think the climate of opinion would have been such that they would have been able to get rid of both Biden and Kamala.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way they would have spun it was, the country's at a crossroads. We cannot keep on with the same old policies that have created this division. They would have probably come out with some public program of this whole thing has to go. Biden, Joe, Kamala, we've lost Trump. We need a fresh new start.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think you're looking at that part of the plan went wrong. And now whoever was part of that plan, at least as far as the Democrats are concerned, are looking forward to a brokered convention, which, you know, everyone's saying it's Kamala right now. I'm not convinced.
No, I'm with you on that. I would also say this, that those people, the consequences for them missing Trump, for them not pulling off the assassination attempt, heads are rolling there. So you have uh-huh. divisions in that structure that were like, hey, we were getting him legally, and this other division saying, no, he's beating the legal rap. He's going to be president. We're not going to wait 4 years. And so now they're clashing with each other, and that's where you see people at the highest level getting thrown out left and right, like the Secret Service director.
Bingo. There is your first head to roll. I was yeah. just going to say.
Yeah.
Her resignation is more about them protecting themselves, because what her resignation indicates to me was that she had to have been in on at least some level of the operational planning.
Right. Yes.
And they're offering her up as a sacrifice. It was, I guarantee you, it was either you resign and preserve some sort of integrity, or we're going to force you out.
Right. Those questions, I haven't seen a hearing like that in years.
I haven't either.
I mean, this is somebody in there, the yeah. anger also of the, hey, they didn't pull it off. gave it a totally different tone. It was, you know, here are the various people that we're going to let out and give out to the crowd as the fodder.
Yep. Daniel, I'm so glad you mentioned the anger, because this was the other point I was going to make, was that was that was exactly my understanding of the anger. It wasn't anger at the incompetence. It was anger that you didn't get the job done.
Right. Yes. All right. That means both sides are against you.
Of course.
Yeah. Incredible. Let's look at something interesting. I just want to draw us into the Trump assassination attempt for a moment, because one thing that's very obvious and an overlap, and it actually reminded me very much of something that you had written in your book, which was about LBJ and his role in the assassination of President Kennedy, that right there at the site of the assassination in 1963, we had Billy Lovelady.
Yes.
And Billy Lovelady working in the building was already a lookalike for Oswald.
Yep.
So they had planted in advance this lookalike.
Yep.
I've always found his story interesting, and also that they, you know, even now, as there's many people who've examined it who wonder, is that Lovelady? You know, and then in this case, Crooks immediately had a double. I mean, it was reported, in fact, as another person right off the bat.
Right.
So we had the parallel moving immediately. And then I found the COG parallel in Winston Lawson. As we know, we've gone over this before about the president's assassination in 1963 and how you had COG personnel using the emergency so-called doomsday network when they were setting up, which is unusual, very unusual activity. And when you get into this, you immediately have the COG crossover with Cheadle, who defended, you know, and was Dick Cheney's Secret Service agent, who drags him into the COG bunker during 9/11. Did that parallel, was there some kind of Kerrang when you saw those two together?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There, again, there's no doubt in my mind that all of what you're watching now is an attempt to grab a hold of enough details to create a plausible narrative.
Oh, wow.
You'll notice that what we're lacking now is something very unusual. Let's step back. Let's look at the Trump attempt. Let's look at JFK. Let's look at RFK. Mm-hmm. Let's look at Lincoln.
Yes.
Look at all those assassinations. In every case, even McKinley and Garfield, for crying out loud, in all of these cases, within a matter of hours, if at best a day or two, there has been a solid scaffolding of a narrative emerge.
Right.
That's not the case here.
Right.
The narrative keeps shifting, and it's major points of the narrative, not minor ones. Mm-hmm. It's major points of the narrative. So this is what convinces me This was an actual attempt that failed, because the original narrative can't be rolled out in its original form.
Right.
They've got to rebrand that. And in the process, they're trying to rebrand everything else. This has been a colossal cluster, you know what, for them.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah. And listen,
they had to reshape the narrative on a dime. Yeah.
And here's the problem. They're now dealing with an opponent who is personally wealthy enough and personally has the connections enough to do some digging on his own, and throw into that mix something we're all forgetting. We're all forgetting Mr. Putin, Mr. Xi, Mr. Modi.
Yes.
And what are they sitting on top of? Well, number one, they're sitting on top of pretty big, powerful countries that want some stability here.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. They're doing their own investigations.
And bingo, they're sitting on top of their own intelligence agencies, and you can bet they're all over this.
Incredible.
So whatever the idiots in the swamp put out as a narrative, they've got to be awful darn careful. Mm-hmm. That it's not going to be contradicted by something that Mr. Putin or Mr. Modi or whoever may know, because If I were sitting in New Delhi right now, I'd be awful sick and tired of this nonsense going on in this country. And I wouldn't want to put up with another minute of it.
Wow.
And if that's the case in New Delhi, you can bet it's double in Beijing and quadruple in Moscow.
Yeah, right. Well, it's interesting because let's track this even deeper on the assassination side. The FBI director now has gone on the record saying what we do know about crooks, you know, lone nut crooks, is that he went in and he was doing searches a week beforehand. By the way, this guy's flying a drone 2 hours before the Trump gets up. I mean, what kind of clearance do you need for that? But here he is now, the FBI director, before this committee, and he's saying, you know, Crooks was searching for Lee Harvey Oswald and his shooting of John F. Kennedy, and they're laying that right in the middle of this narrative.
Yes.
Incredible.
Yeah, they're trying desperately to make this a lone nut scenario.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, again, I'm not even convinced that the shot that grazed President Trump's ear came from Crooks.
Yes.
This is my problem.
Yes. There's multiple accounts.
There's multiple shooters here.
And there's audio analysis putting shooters behind the Crooks building. Yeah.
Right. Right. And where's all the bullets?
Yes.
You know, what's the bullet? You know, lone nut, my you know what.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
for that matter, do we know that some of those counter sniper teams weren't really shooting at Trump rather than Crooks? We don't know that either.
Yeah. Excellent point.
We don't know that. Do I trust the FBI? Well, they haven't found a burnt passport, miraculously, you know, on the street that he got to Saudi Arabia, but you know,
9/11.
So do I trust a corrupted lying organization like the FBI? I have one word for those people that do, and the word is Waco. Okay.
Oh, you know, yeah, yes.
None of it should people trust. None of it. This is why I'm waiting for the Mark Lanes and the Jim Garrisons and the Harold Weisbergs.
Yes.
Because those men were the ones that challenged the official narrative of, by the way, Hoover's FBI. And what a stalwart, upright organization that was.
When it JFK referred to him as dangerous as a rattlesnake.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was absolutely right.
Amazing.
So, you know, we're all of a sudden going to trust these people? No, I'm sorry.
It's incredible, too, when they get questioned and, you know, they would always pass it. The Secret Service leader, Cheadle, she was always saying, oh, no, you have to talk to the FBI. They're doing the investigation. I'm just the Secret Service director.
Where would we hear that before?
Exactly.
Gee, you know, I can think of a couple of occasions in 1963.
Yeah, right.
You know?
It's incredible, isn't it? Because that arc, you're talking 60 years, 61 years now coming into this. And it's interesting to me as well, because, of course, they still have all the records around the JFK assassination locked up, the pertinent CIA records. Interesting lack of mention about the Central Intelligence Agency in relation to this shooting, because here's what I find pretty wild. Supposedly now they were tracking independently of this incident an Iranian hit team, Joseph, and that Iranian hit team, they wanted Trump. They were going for Trump. They were following him. We were very aware of this. Wouldn't you think the CIA would be involved in something of an international threat basis? But there, the mention of the CIA in this incident is completely absent.
I had not heard that, but I'll tell you what my suspicion is if that story should prove to be true.
Mm-hmm.
If the Iranians were stupid enough to have tried something like that, and I don't think they are, but if they were, imagine what the narrative would be right now had the assassination had succeeded. Well, we would have found all those passports lying around on the ground conveniently for the FBI to find, and we would have their faces emblazoned on the television, and these were all Iranian terrorists, and we need to track them down, and if you're not with us, you're against us, and we're all ready to go in for another war.
Right.
And this time with Iran. And trust me, folks, say what you will about Iran, that's not a cakewalk.
Oh, yeah, right. No way.
No, yeah. It is.
Almost 100 million people there.
100 million people with an advanced infrastructure and a literate culture and a non-woke military. Gosh. Right.
And Blinken is like, oh, they're only a week away from a nuke. Sorry, I couldn't stop them. You know, I gave them billions of dollars, but they still didn't stop.
Yeah, and you know, that would be the narrative right now. And again, I would have most of my thinking in the doubt column there. About 99.9% of my thinking would be in the doubt column. It would be the perfect sort of setup for them to have tried. In other words, if this is the story coming out now, it was another setup for a let it happen on purpose scenario. And once we get to the parallel between the Trump assassination and 9/11 and Middle Eastern actors involved in it, then we have to query those actors. Were they really Iranians, or were they somebody acting as cat's paws to put the blame on Iran? In other words, was it a made it happen
scenario? Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So, you know, any way you slice this, Daniel, this was an operation, and there are at least two, if not three, levels to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an operation that failed.
Right.
And that's why they're in the mess they're in. They are going to have to try and pull their fat out of the fire in some fashion. And what bothers me, the reason, Daniel, that I mentioned the foreign leaders and them wanting to know what's going on here, and that they are going to be tasking their on the ground human intelligence inside this country to find out and convey independent information, independent of all the Western press coverage,
mm-hmm.
because they know something that has not occurred to most Americans. That if this was a botched assassination attempt on the part of the COG and all of these people inside the rotting American government, that group of people may try and pull their fat out of the fire by starting something foreign with them.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, they will not be able to have their intelligence or research or analysis heard in the Western press, even if they were to make it public.
Oh,
that's my worry.
Oh, yeah.
The way you shut Mr. Putin or Mr. Xi or Mr. Modi up is to create an international incident that absolutely puts anything they say on this event into a bad limelight. We are in a very, very dangerous period.
Oh, yeah. This is interesting because if you look at parallels going back to 1963, they had a perilous situation with Oswald, because they had done such a good job of massaging his image as, you know, living in the USSR and the Cuba part.
Yep.
And so the Iranians, in a way, are filling the role of the Cubans here.
Yes, that's exactly my point. They have. By being so damned clever in the way that they've sheep-dipped this operation, they've painted themselves into a corner.
Wow. Yeah. And with its lack of success, it's brought in at least a contingency party of the COG group looking at it and saying, you know, do we need emergency powers to step in here?
And oh, by the way,
election. Yeah.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, it's just purely coincidental that Mr. Nutanyahu is over here right now, you know. You were addressing
that's some timing, my God.
I mean, folks, could it get more obvious?
Yeah.
You know, if there was an Iranian false flag component to this operation, who would you want to be over here right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Voila.
Absolutely. How far in advance were those plans made? I think this is
exactly the question. In other words, this is why I say take a step back and look at this whole thing in the context of all this other stuff that's been happening in recent months.
Well, let's do a rewind briefly here. Mm-hmm. One of the strangest things of this entire event of the assassination attempt on Trump is that a few weeks before, he had accepted from the Biden camp this invitation to do a debate outside of the normal season of political debates.
Yep.
Now, the presidential debates traditionally always take place in September and October. After Labor Day, and you know, after the different candidates and the nominees are accepted by the party. Exactly. So the idea to do that on June 27th, before any of that has gone down, completely bucking history, somebody in the structure knew we need this device. They knew that Biden was going to be shaky and screw up and show his senility. And they said, we need this device. And somehow they got Trump to agree to it. And Trump was just like, hey, anywhere, anytime. And they get together and they have this. And then the entire media circus around, oh, Biden is senile, you know, and all the rest of it. He has to go. We need somebody else. And even, you know, the MSNBC's turning on him. So that's part of this chain of events. Yes. And also the release of Julian Assange comes up right in the middle of that. What is the Assange debate strangeness before the incident give us indications of?
All right. I think the debate was had as one of its principal objectives not merely to display Mr. Biden for what he has always been. You know, forget about the age and dementia. The man is fundamentally stupid. He's a stupid, incompetent, venal, mendacious, wicked little man. That's all he has ever been. But in addition to getting people to see this, what that debate was really about was to provide a context or event which would allow the Mockingbird media to pivot.
That's it.
Because, again, when you talk about continuity of government and intelligence operations, the lamestream propertainment media in this country is deeply, deeply penetrated and influenced by that whole intelligence network. So this was an event, in my opinion, that was designed to allow them to pivot away from Mr. Biden. And in that sense, it was entirely successful. I suspect that at a lower level of agenda, that one of the things that they wanted to accomplish in that debate, in addition to getting rid of Mr. Biden, was to have Trump in some form or fashion go off against Biden so that they could say, oh, see how cruel and wicked Orange Man Bad really is. Not only do we have to get rid of Orange Man Bad, but you're crazy if you want to vote for Orange Man Bad. And Trump didn't take the bait. He just let Biden make a complete ass of himself.
Right.
And at one point it was class, and I knew that this was the fix, because at one point you see Trump kind of turning like this and looking at Biden like, are you okay?
You're right.
You know, and then he turns away. Yeah, and he kind of frowns like, is this guy? And at that point, you know, I was shocked that CNN even showed that.
Yeah.
But it was after the second time that Trump did that little double take, like, this guy is really going off the rails. It was at that point that the CNN moderator jumped in and, you know, moved the conversation along, because it was clear that Trump was not going to bite. He was not going to nibble, and he wasn't going to pounce on Biden at the time. So I thought, okay, this was a huge setup, not just for Biden. It was a setup for Trump.
Yeah.
And he didn't play.
No, and it was strange as they were almost polite to Trump, which is absolutely bizarre.
Which really threw me for a loop.
Yeah.
You know, so again, that's another
I mean, that never happens.
No, it never happens. It never happens. So the whole thing, I think, was to allow them to pivot, which we're watching them do. And, you know, right now, the Wicked Witch of the West is the best thing since sliced bread and ruby slippers. It's totally off the chart. And trust me, folks, the polls that you're seeing now of Kamala Harris, you know, being marginally ahead of Trump or whatever, these are made up.
Wow.
They are going to collapse. They're going to collapse faster than a house of cards in a hurricane.
Well, yeah. Just briefly, Assange.
Okay, yeah.
It's unusual before everything takes place, before the debate and everything else, that suddenly the U.S. government comes to terms and Assange gets released.
Yes.
And part of that is to say...
In Samoa.
Yeah.
By a court in Samoa.
Yeah, right. Showing the power of the courts there worldwide. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. When you look at that and you look at the timing of it, and of course, no one in that government wanted to let Assange out. He represents everything. He's the one who helped Trump get in fact, by releasing the DNC emails with Hillary's corruption weekly during the 2016 election.
Yes.
That's something that Trump didn't have on his side the next time around. And he surely missed it. We know there were CIA, there were whole plans to assassinate Assange while he was at the embassy in London. And they even have news reports showing CIA people during these periods when there were strange things like people scaling the building, trying to get in there to shoot him. So certainly, you know, he's in their targets. And we know the famous quote from Hillary, "Can't we just drone this guy?"
Yeah.
The idea of them making a deal for his release struck me as weird with the timing on everything. What did you think of it?
Oh, I thought it was hugely suspicious because, first of all, you're right. They've been trying to get rid of this guy for years, literally. I mean, you know, I believe the term is liquidate.
Yeah.
They have literally been trying to murder this guy for a long time. And for whatever reason, it hasn't worked or they were not able to do so. So what do? We make an agreement with him. You keep your mouth shut and don't release anything more or we'll kill you.
Wow. Yeah.
In other words, shut down your damn network. Now, I have no doubt in my mind, Assange being the kind of character that he is, has some sort of either dead man switch or backup plan. And it's the dead man switch, I think, that ultimately was the reason that any attempts on his life failed. But I think at this juncture, with everything going on that's going on, and with Mr. Globaloney slowly understanding that his grip on things is beginning to slip, and slip quickly, that they knew that that dead man switch was probably of lesser importance than maintaining their grip on power. So they pulled out all the stops and they cut a deal. And the deal was quite literally, shut down your network or we pull the plug. However, that said, I think there's a network of informants and deep sources that Assange put together. And I think he put it together in such a way that it will continue to function without him.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah.
We haven't seen the manifestation of it yet. I think in the next few months, along with all the other shenanigans that Mr. Globaloney is going to pull, we're going to start seeing some weird, weird stuff hit the news.
Yeah.
I really do.
Interesting.
And it may be the remnants of that network or whatever grows in... will grow to replace it. Mr. Globaloney's mistake is to think that Assange represents a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
No, Assange represents the growing global revolt against their rule and against their system.
Right.
You can get rid of him. You're never going to get rid of his idea or the network, ever.
Right. Right.
The only thing they've done is they've made him a martyr. That's it.
There's no question about it. And what's interesting is he somehow plays out in this chain of events because
he's
in there just before that debate happens, just before the assassination attempt happened. This becomes a piece of it. And some people looked at that and said, you know, Assange immediately becomes part of this election.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. They have to shut him. They have to shut him down. And again, like I say, they were successful in shutting him down as far as this election is concerned, but I don't think they've shut his network down. They may think they have. I don't think they have.
Interesting.
Something's going to happen. You know, it's going to pop loose somewhere. Just look at what happened in Europe. That whole thing is popping loose. Try as Macron might, he just cannot keep Marine Le Pen down. It's not happening. And the same thing inside the United Kingdom. You know, Nigel Farage, folks, if you don't understand British politics, you don't understand what just happened inside the United Kingdom. Nigel Farage put together a political party in a matter of weeks and with no money.
Wow.
And got seats in Parliament.
Fantastic.
And trust me, folks, if you think the system is stacked against third parties in this country, you have no idea what it's like in Great Britain. None. And the same thing, I guarantee you, we're watching the German lender, the German states, starting to revolt right now.
Yes.
They're starting to pull state welfare funding from all the migrants and stuff. And this is going to be a real interesting thing because Scholz won't be able to handle it.
Wow.
He won't.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. So, if you, it's interesting. You mentioned third party there, and we did bring up Bobby Kennedy Jr. I do want to say this, that there's two interesting things there with Bobby in relation to this. One is immediately after the assassination attempt, he had a call with Trump.
Yes.
And it was before Trump announced his VP. So all that rumor mill circulated again, which had circulated last year that Trump had offered the VP position to Kennedy last year, and Kennedy had said no. Now, this time, the call leaked from the Bobby side, and later Bobby said, oh, I'm sorry about it. But it seems like an intentional leak. It was actually by his son.
Right.
And the leak was a conversation with Bobby and Trump about vaccines and how they could really do that vaccine commission this time. And it would Trump being very cordial again with Bobby and saying, you know, this would be big for you. We can do this together and so on. And then it seems like somehow Bobby and Trump, you know, Trump is doing the overtures and the Bobby side is not grasping hands with the Trump piece because the two of them together, unstoppable force. Right. Bobby takes his grassroots people, the Trump wave. That's the end of the Democrat Harris Biden nightmare regime.
It would absolutely
that would be the end.
Yeah. That would be the 50 megaton airburst.
This is interesting to me because it seems like there's a reluctance there. And then you also see maybe a missed opportunity on the independent side. You see a lot of people going after Trump at what seems to be the perfectly wrong time. So I see all these things and I study the independent media and there's this big wave of like, oh, that Trump, you know, he's going to get Jamie Dimon as his Treasury Secretary. And Trump comes out with a statement. I never said anything like that. So, you know, I mean, we're looking at weird dynamics floating around here. There's somebody in that Bobby campaign who is saying, hang in there, you can win. Don't join up with Trump. But is that an attempt to split the opposition so that somehow this thing that they inaugurate at the Democratic convention can be moved across the finish line in a squeaker, even if there's fraud attached?
Well, that may be, you know, I'm not discounting, you know, the Democratic Party is absolutely bottomless in its ability to come up with shenanigans.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I put nothing past them. So, you know, could they pull off some last minute stunt that would include Bobby Kennedy? maybe. They would have to pay a pretty high price because I don't think he would sell easily. But I do think that he would be at least amenable to having some sort of role in whatever administration they may get if they run a victorious campaign. My problem is I'm not seeing it quite that way.
Right.
So my problem with Trump has been always that he's not really acknowledged the mistake or mistakes that he made in handling the whole COVID plan scamdemic. So now along comes Bobby, wrote his book, The Real Anthony Fauci, during all of this period, which, folks, if you haven't read the book, read it. It's an incredible book.
Yeah.
It's an incredible book. And, you know, he's taken these pharma companies and Monsanto and so on into court and won.
Yeah, right. He's no friend to the pharmaceutical.
He's no friend to the pharmaceutical companies or to the GMO companies. He's independent on that score. So the way I'm looking at Trump's overture, it was a last grasp attempt by Big Pharma via Trump to silence Bobby on those matters. Because whether you like him or don't like him, or whether you agree or disagree with him on these issues, he's fairly solid and he has a track record of dealing with them. So when I look at that Trump phone call, I thought, oh, they're trying to get Bobby in and shut him up. Mm. And good for him. He's not doing it.
Yes.
Now, what that means by the same token is any attempt on the part of the Democratic Party leadership to get him to do the same thing, it's going to fall flat on its face, and it right. should.
Right.
You know,
what do you think of the danger of splitting the opposition? So we have the opposition to the Democratic regime, the Trump people, but then the Bobby people seem to be pulling from the Trump votes. Mm-hmm. And so you have the possibility there that two of those go against the Biden regime and the Harris thing squeaks through because they split the opposition vote.
I don't see it. My problem is I think Bobby's going to pull, especially now with Kaklyn Kamala. If they leave her in, Bobby will take votes away from the Democratic ticket.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Two ways. Think about it. Compare Bobby and Kamala.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, everybody says, well, I can't stand to listen to Bobby's voice. Well, I can't stand to listen to Kamala cackle. I'd much rather listen to Bobby because he has something to say.
No, I think Bobby's a great candidate. One of the things the campaign missed, and I think it's because it wasn't run by political people, it was run really largely by PR style people.
Right. Right.
And one of the things that they did with Bobby is they spread him out. So he'd be over here talking about 12-step programs, or he'd be over here talking about things. And nobody really knew about his central kind of 5-point plan about how you would change things in the country. But I think that he showed a kind of a courage in the middle of all that, but he just was not presented properly. And so I think this is part of the problem. I do think with his independent party for 2028, he has a great shot. You know, but it doesn't seem to me in this election that he could get in.
No, I don't think there's any path to him to victory. But I do think he's going to pull. If the current Kamala ticket and Trump tickets are the tickets that will run on election day, he will pull from both of them.
What do you think of the Trump RFK? Because, you know, I've talked with Bobby and I've had him on the program and stuff, and I have the impression that, like, he will kind of, you know, if he feels like it's in the best interest of the country, that he would reach out across the political spectrum.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's entirely possible.
Those efforts are interesting to me in the background because Trump, in a way, senses, well, I'm going to need that little opposition piece to help me get over the finish line. And I think that call was kind of like, hey, Bobby, you know, this is assassination attempt against me. We have all this in common. Let's unify right now and, you know, get rid of this.
I don't think he needs it to get across the finish line.
Maybe not.
But I do think to follow up on where you're going with that. I've never had the idea that Mr. Kennedy was thinking in terms of just this election.
It's a long-term plan.
It's a long-term thing, and hence the campaign that he's running right now is not political. It is PR. Because in the long term, he needs the exposure of where he stands on a variety of things. And he needs to get himself out there so that people can get the feel of the man in respect to some of these other things. So I've never had the idea that this is a one-off for Mr. Mm-hmm. Kennedy. I think rather it's a long-term thing. I think that also because if you're from that family and have been so much a part of Democratic Party politics for so long, you know, going all the way back to Roosevelt, quite frankly.
Oh, yeah.
If you've been a part of that party for so long and then watched it fall apart and become part of this uniparty blob in Swampington, D.C., you regardless of what you think of the Kennedys or their politics, you can't go along with it. You just have to want either to see that Democratic Party collapse and something else emerge in its place, or you've got to go in and make a clean sweep and sweep out the dross and bring in competent people, which it doesn't have.
Right.
You know, it has the most competent people it has right now are the Clintons. Right. And they're as corrupt as you can be.
Yeah.
More importantly, they're part of that, you know, that uniparty Clinton Bush blob. You know,
yeah.
They're part of that swamp, pardon me.
Oh yeah. Incredible. So
I can also see I can see Mr. Kennedy attempting either to do what Bill Clinton attempted to do and, you know, failed miserably or just really wasn't all that serious about, and try to push the Democratic Party away from the radical element that's taken over and back toward the center, right, and back towards its roots. And who better to do that than a Kennedy?
Yes.
Particularly one perceived to be as liberal as Mr. Kennedy is perceived to be. So, you know, he's got a lot going for him on that score. So I don't think, you know, I don't think you've seen and will see the last of Mr. Kennedy in this election cycle.
Incredible. Yeah. But,
you know, that's given that the institutions of the country continue more or less as they are. And that's really my big problem with all of this is whatever else this election cycle is, it's not regular. Nothing about it is regular, and I think the irregularity is going to increase, and there is a good possibility, like I said before, of some serious incident happening, either a false flag or major post-election violence from one or the other, or perhaps both sides. Who knows? I don't know.
Wow, absolutely. They have 3 months to pull this off.
Yep.
And just to round out this whole section, President Trump, before he was assassinated, was talking about reviving President Reagan's SDI program.
Yes.
And using it as a shield across the United States.
Yep.
He compared it to the Iron Dome and things of that. And he said, but we can do something much better. They weren't able to pull off SDI in the 80s under Reagan, but Reagan had a great idea and I will accomplish that.
Right.
I'm sure that caught the attention of the COG space aspect.
Oh, yeah.
And the continuity of government players, when they were looking at that, it seems to me it contributed to, let's say, their need to have Trump off the board. They really want Trump out of the picture. Mm-hmm. Trump also is in an unusual position in relation, as we've discussed before, to the deep state, that he knows a number of things that the deep state knows, whereas a lot of presidents are vacant in relationship to this. One of the things that I find interesting about Trump that he is able then to dip in between those two worlds and take them on in different ways. And that the COG aspect, when they're looking at him talking about Star Wars, they're saying, oh, he did Space Force. We don't want him anywhere near this SDI thing. Mm-hmm. My question is, the COG group looking at Trump, if he is looking like he's going to be triumphant, what are the odds, and I'll give it a scale of 1 to 10, of the continuity of government players leaning in with an emergency powers declaration to take over so that the election doesn't happen?
Oh, I think I definitely think those types of scenarios are on the table.
Yeah. Do you think the odds went up since the assassination attempt?
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, as part of this calculus, let's look at the geopolitics of Mr. Trump's Iron Dome announcement.
Yeah.
From the standpoint of Russia, you're dealing with a country that has invested heavily in offensive strategic weapons, ballistic missiles, and so on, that are of a generation that we do not have in this country to near the degree or capability that they do. Their hypersonic missiles are capable of targeting basically anything in the world and can change course in flight should they want to do so.
Unbelievable.
You know, we're not dealing with the old-fashioned ballistic missile anymore. You're dealing with a missile that basically is controllable in flight.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem. Russia has completed its GLONASS, you know, its GPS satellite system. So it can, you know, bad news, Mr. Soros, it can drop a drone right on your house.
Okay. Wow.
And trust me, that's Mr. Global's well aware of it. You know, all those warnings that the Russian leaders have been making that we can target you, they're being taken very seriously. Very seriously. So when Trump comes out and talks about his Iron Dome, what Trump is really communicating to Mr. Putin and to Mr. Xi is, okay, you've invested all this money in all these offensive weapons. We'll just do what Reagan did to your old Soviet Union after you spent all that money on those ballistic missiles.
Well, fantastic point.
It'll exhaust you. But the problem there is for the continuity of government people who, as far as they're concerned, you know, they hate everything Russian. I mean, you know, if it's a samovar, they hate it. I can see Trump's Iron Dome having a certain attraction for them, because with a shield, and this was always the Soviet objection to Star Wars, is that it was really an offensive strategy that Reagan was pursuing, mm-hmm. because by putting the United States under a shield, it would be able to strike the Soviet Union with no threat of retaliation. And that's exactly the way the Russians are going to view this.
Yes. Yeah.
So the continuity of government people have as much to support in Mr. Trump's announcement as they do to object. The real question becomes, why is Trump proposing it? I think he's proposing it much the way Reagan did. Part of Reagan's proposing the whole thing was to have a bargaining chip in negotiations. I don't think Reagan, in fact, I'm fairly confident that his advisors told him that we don't have the technology to do this right now. And Reagan was, we can investigate the technology. In the meantime, it will give me something that I can use to negotiate things with Mr. Gorbachev, which he did.
Yeah.
Which he did.
He used it at every meeting.
At every meeting he used it. And because Mr. Gorbachev did not have a similar program that had been announced in the Soviet Party Congresses, you know, he was kind of left holding the bag. So, you know, this is what I think is going on here. I think the geopolitical calculus that's going on behind the scenes is a lot more subtle than people are giving Mr. Trump credit for. Now, does he mean what he says by building an Iron Dome? I think he does, absolutely. Because the technology, compared to where we were in the 1980s with trying to hit a ballistic missile in flight with whatever, a particle beam or brilliant pebbles or whatever, you know, other device they had, is way, way off the chart better than it was when Mr. Reagan made his speech.
No question. So, and that gets us into the exotic technology question.
Technology, yes.
That'll lead us into the next segment we're going to do, the way to close, which is going to be powerful. The way to close this one, since we were talking about Reagan there, Reagan and Gorbachev, according to Gorbachev, who came out in 2014 and said it, when they met at Reykjavik, Reagan said, if the UFO threat emerges and they attack us, will you help us? That's on the record now from Gorbachev.
Yeah.
How does that relate to this Trump raising this?
There, Daniel, I'm quite convinced that there is an aspect to all of this politics that is so deeply hidden that we really know nothing about it. And I do think it's space related. These globalists have been in a hurry for a very long time. They're in a hurry. And I've always suspected it's because they know something or suspect something. And they are either going to create a false flag or they've done something and they're in a hurry to repair some damage. I don't know. There's a space aspect to this that boggles the mind. I mean, it's not just Mr. Trump that's made these weird, weird statements. Go back about 10 to 12 years and look at Dmitry Medvedev inside of Russia and statements he's made.
Yeah, off the charts.
And they're off the charts, weird. And he's doing it on television, like, you know, just like Trump is, like, it's no big deal, you know. Okay. You know, it's just, and you know, the Chinese, Lord only knows what the Chinese are thinking. You know, they've been able to land a probe on the far side of the moon, you know, and they're not talking very much about it.
Yeah.
You know? So,
wow. It reminds me of the moon tunnel story that's coming out, which I'm sure is something that came up during Kennedy's quest for the moon.
Oh, you got to believe it, man.
That's what we're going to go into here, and the secret crisscross at the heart of all this in part two. Now, let's go into this secret, Joseph, because I think the things that you've uncovered here are dramatic.
Are we starting part two now? I know for sure.
So let's round out this episode. So we'll go directly into part two after this.
Okay. All right. We'll do. Thank you for having me back on, Daniel. And part two, you might want to do the same yourself. You know, whatever your favorite adult drink is, I'd pour a couple fingers of that one.
Here we go. This part two is going to go off the charts. All right.
Okay. I'll be right back.
Amazing. And now in part two, a deep discovery Dr. Farrell made regarding some research I brought forward concerning Dr. Lloyd Berkner. Joseph may have found a public key to exotic technology through an obscure nuclear plan. Dark Journalist subscribers will receive the special episode in their inbox this weekend. You can become a subscriber at darkjournalist.com or use the link in the description of this video. Of course, Dr. Farrell's work is available at GizaDeathStar.com. Thank you for joining us. Don't miss part two. See you soon.